Hey, it's Andrea. Today, we preview the most punchable faces of Starfleet. An old man is in love with his stepdaughter. And we ask the question, why does Data keep telling people about his off switch? Stay tuned to find out.
Welcome to the TNG Podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek, The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
Hey, I'm your co-host, Andrea. Charisse, today we're talking Season 2, Episode 6, entitled The Schizoid Man. This episode was written by Richard Manning and Hans Beimler, directed by Les Landau. The stardate is 42437.5. Let's just jump right into the synopsis. The Enterprise responds to a request for medical assistance from Dr. Ira Graves, considered by many to be the greatest living mind in the universe. Dr. Selar, one of the doctors on the Enterprise, determines that Graves has Darnay's disease, an incurable terminal disease, and only has weeks to live. So the team begins to collect Graves' research and record to preserve them after his death. Graves recognizes Data as Noonien Soong's creation and claims he taught Soong everything he knows, which he asserts that if Soong is considered Data's father, that would make Graves his grandfather. Graves and Data begin to spend significant time alone together, during which Graves reveals that he has developed a method to transfer his consciousness to a computer, allowing him to live indefinitely.
Bum, bum, bum.
We need that for every episode.
We really do, because I kind of want to do it at the end of every synopsis, regardless of what you say at the end. Even when you were just like, in this episode, Yar dies. Bum, bum, bum.
In this episode, they go to Ryza for vacation.
Bum, 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 bum. Exactly. Exactly. So, okay, overall thoughts. What were your overall thoughts about this episode?
I mean, I was a little bit neutral about it. I really do love seeing Data get to flex his acting muscles and not just be robotic. Mm-hmm. So that's really fun to see him doing this kind of like split personality thing. Mm-hmm. It's always fun when Data's programming gets screwed up. That's always like fun.
That's because, always a recipe for a good time.
Well, it's always a recipe for Brent Spiner to like be fantastic. So that's really fun. The plot itself, I was like, okay, all right. It's interesting. But it didn't stand out in my mind as like, oh, I really love this episode. How about you?
You know, I feel similar. I actually really like this episode because I love the idea of transferring your consciousness to a machine. And it, you know what? This is just like a recurrent theme for me. This is already episode 6. And I feel like 5 out of the last 6 episodes have been very similar to this, where I don't hate them. Like there were episodes in season 1 where I just seriously hated them. So I don't hate them, but I also don't love them because they don't push the drama far enough. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like an interesting, like intellectual exercise, right? Where you're like, huh, how fascinating. And then it kind of goes off. So it's not like it's bad, but also it's not like you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Like I'm still thinking about it days later. Oh, it just totally like it doesn't get to that level. However, I totally agree with you. I love seeing Brent Spiner just show his acting chops. Seeing Data like just behaving strangely is always super interesting. And I like, I like the whole grandpa thing. I thought that was just so funny and like, and Data just attaches to it immediately. Like, okay, grandpa, like, oh, that's just so cute.
It's very endearing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's super cute. So I'm thinking back to the episode where Tasha dies, Skin of Evil. And I remember you saying that, like, you thought it was funny that one of our guests, Chris French, does like, he says he yars himself. Like every couple of years, he does a little like farewell video to those important in his life in case he like dies suddenly. And you said like, this is all news to me because I plan on living forever. So I could see you totally attaching to like uploading your consciousness to a computer so you just live on forever.
Oh my gosh. I totally wouldn't do that though. That sounds like such a not fun life. Really, Ira Graves just was lucky that Data happened to be on the away team and he was able to transfer his consciousness into Data because he had originally planned to just put it into that giant computer that looked like a washing machine and he would have just stayed in that washing machine forever and like that stuff. So he was really lucky that he found the one and only android in all of Starfleet.
In the entire universe. Yeah.
Right. So he could walk and talk and interact with people. So that was kind of a stroke of luck on his part.
Well, I think it's a stroke of luck too that he found Data and not Lore, because Lore would just let him take over and start doing all these bad things. So it's like we'd have a supervillain on our hands.
Or Lore would just like kill him because he was just crazy. Who knows? Who knows what would have happened with the two of them together, right?
Because
Data was just so innocent to be like, I have an off switch. And you're like, buddy, stop telling people about that. That shouldn't just be something you share with people.
And he shares often that he's like, I really don't like to tell people that. Then stop telling people that.
I feel like he needs a security update. Somebody needs to like, Jordy needs to update his programming to be like, do not mention this unless absolutely critically necessary. But he's just so trusting, you know?
Yeah, he is.
So when we open up in this episode, we see Jordy and Troy walking in the corridor talking about Data. And Jordy mentions how Data is kind of acting like he's insecure about meeting Ira Graves.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, this is just such a lovely scene, right? It's just a kind of like a little slice of life moment where they're not doing their duties. It's not about, you know, they're not pushing buttons, but they're just kind of talking as friends about another friend who's having some concerning behavior,
yes,
but in a really kind of funny way.
Yes. And then when they go into his quarters, he's very mysterious about like letting them in, mm-hmm, and being like, is Counselor Troy with you? Like before you come in. So when Jordy's like, so can we like come in and see what you're up to? He's like, yes, of course. And then we see the worst beard I've ever seen in my life. It was the best, worst decision that Data could have done. And the like makeup and costuming department, I guess that's makeup. I guess fake hair is like maybe makeup department. I don't know. Or maybe hair and makeup are together. I don't know. But they did this incredible job at making this like crazy, like stark, mm-hmm, contrast with his skin tone, mm-hmm, and like this black beard. It just looks so awful. And I love that Troy has to be like, excuse me, I have to go. And yep. And Jordy goes,
like,
Jordy says, did you damage your face, Data? That is so like innocent. Like, did you do some sort of chemical burn? Like, what is that? Like,
and Data's response as he's like stroking his beard, he's like, this beard commands respect, projects thoughtfulness and dignity as I stroke it. And they're just like looking at him, trying not to laugh. And it's just a really like sweet and funny kind of a scene.
It really is. And it's definitely sophomoric in that like Data is getting into that like middle school, high school-y, like you're experimenting, mm-hmm, with your look and finding out like who you really are, like stylistically. Mm-hmm. And he's made, haven't we all, he's made a bad turn.
Yes. Oh yes. We've all done that.
Mm-hmm. I am happy to share that the first time I have very curly, like frizzy hair, and I always wanted like straight, luscious, long hair, like all the other girls in my school. And I got a flat iron and I was like, oh, this is amazing. So I'm like 12 and I'm flat ironing the front of my hair. And I'm like, perfect, it's done. Like, the front looks amazing. So I'm going out in the world with the back of my head not straightened at all. Just frizzy and curly. And the front of my hair, like, stick straight. I was so confused as to how you do that. How do you make your hair in the back? You know, because I just had a little mirror and I was like, how do you do the back? I don't know. So we've all been there, Data. It's okay. It's okay. At least you didn't go like
growing up. Yeah,
it is. And then you end up with stories like I tried a beard that didn't work, or I flat ironed just the front of my hair and, mm-hmm, looked like a freaking idiot the, yep, rest of the day with my hair curly in the back, not realizing that was like, just because I couldn't see it, others could.
Right.
So
totally.
We've all been there.
And so what I like is that this is kind of a bit of a, I won't say a growth spurt, but this is a bit of a step up from that opening scene back in season one where Wesley walks into Data's quarters and he's practicing sneezing, mm-hmm, and you're just like, what is this? Like, it was just, mm-hmm, weird. It was out of place. He's sitting there going, "Hachoo!" And you're like,
yeah,
what? So this actually kind of makes more sense if he's being insecure about meeting Dr. Ira Graves. If he's just insecure for the sake of it, then it's still a little bit weird. But anyways, I just really like that scene.
Well, remember, they didn't get the distress call until after Data reveals his beard. So I think he was just taking some downtime to like experiment with his look. But my advice to Data is maybe just try like a different hairdo to start and then kind of build from there.
Do a mohawk. That's my fave.
Yeah. Charisse has a somewhat mohawk, and it looks amazing and kick ass. So
it's called a frohawk, and it's pretty cool. I would like to see Data in a mohawk or just something different. Although then they'd have to put the paint all the way up on his scalp too. So I don't know.
Oh.
Anyways, so we get this. Distress call about Graves. At the same time, we get another distress call about these colonists on a ship, and their hull is about to breach. And there are 2,012 colonists, which is like, whoa. So it's twice the complement of the Enterprise.
Yes.
That could all just be sucked out into space any minute. And so now Picard's just like, oh no, what are we going to do? Because, you know, Ira Graves, he's like the smartest man in the universe. We need to like help him. And then it takes Pulaski to say, but Picard, there are 2,012 people who are going to die, and he's just one man.
Mm-hmm.
That whole scene, I was kind of like, I don't know if I bought that as far as characters go. It's like, I don't know if Picard would have been the one who really needed somebody to tell him how to prioritize in this situation.
Yes.
So I feel this is a little off as far as characters go.
I can see that. I can see that, because you're right. When Pulaski says, like, we have to help them, and Picard goes, well, what about Ira Graves? I love that Pulaski gives it to him straight. She says, he's one person. He's just one person. And there are thousands, you know? So I think that is the right call. And I like that they did come up with that, like jumping out of warp for like a hot second to like transport them and then, you know, zoom back away, you know, to the planet that needs help.
Mm-hmm.
Which I kind of was confused about that, because they have totally beamed people off and on in warp drive, like when they've been in warp speed. I'm pretty sure they have.
I don't recall them doing that in warp speed, because usually they need their shields down to transport people. And I think they have shields up when they do warp. I'm not really sure, but I don't recall them doing it like beaming people in warp. So if you remember that episode when they were all trapped on the planet and Geordi was in charge and they had to like go back and try to get them.
Yeah.
There was a whole thing about dropping out of warp before you could do anything. So they had to drop out of warp before they could fire, before they could transport. And remember, they were transporting like three people at a time off the planet. And they were like, they would fly up to the planet and then drop out of warp and then transport and then go back into warp and come back around. So yeah, I think that's a thing that's been consistent, is you can't transport in warp. So they called it like near warp. Like they kind of paused, popped them out, and kept going.
Huh. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to keep an eye out for that, because I was in my notes, I was like, mm-hmm. why would you drop out of warp to beam down? But okay. So they beam down, and Dr. Salar, she is another doctor on the ship, which is nice to know that there are multiples. And I feel like there's a couple of reasons that Pulaski wanted to not beam down for Ira Graves. Number one, because she's deathly afraid of the transporter.
Oh, right.
And you know, I think she used the colonists needing medical assistance as her like kind of backup, where she's like, whoop, whoop, I need to be here for this more important thing.
But so I'm going to send my assistants. Right. If they're like exactly what she said there could be hundreds of people needing help there versus, again, one man. We probably only need one, you know, any medical officer would probably be good in this situation. We're not going to need like crazy emergency surgery and triaging all over the place. So
yeah,
that kind of makes sense too.
Yeah.
Here's so a fun fact about Dr. Salar. The actress who plays Dr. Salar is the same actress who plays Worf's love interest later on.
Oh my God. It's
totally her. And like when I first saw her and heard her voice, I was like, is that Worf's girlfriend?
Oh my God.
But yes. We'll talk about that when we get to that episode. Oh, there's some good drama with that.
You're so right. That is her. She seemed so familiar. And that actress has like a spectacular like way of carrying herself, like just like strong and silent and confident. And I really, really like her. And I love her as like a compliment for Worf. But yeah, we'll talk about that when we get to that.
And she's been in like every show known to man. I was looking her up in IMDb because I was like, I feel like I've seen her in something else as well. She was also the female Q in Voyager, because they have a female Q at some point who's like Q's wife.
Amazing.
Yes. And she was also in an episode of Enterprise. So these are just her Star Trek related shows, but she's also been in a ton of other shows. So anyways, I just love it when they reuse actors in TNG for other TNG episodes. Cause I'm always like, hey, they were in that one. They were in that
one. Yes. That's like the episode when the bow breaks, when that delegate from that planet that kidnapped Wesley.
Right. Right.
That's the
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain. Yeah. So speaking of, W. Morgan Shepherd plays Dr. Graves. He was also in Voyager as well. Like he was a character in one episode of Voyager. He was also in a Star Trek movie, and he has this extremely impressive acting career that spans 50 plus years. He's been in over 100 films, TV shows, and video games as a voice actor. Like the man has done, you know, and I could see him as a voice actor. He had that like real gravelly, like
he did have a cool voice.
He did. He killed it. I think he that totally W. Morgan Shepherd was amazing. Like crotchety. Yeah. To see him and Data like play off each other. It was so great. It was so great.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Like, it was got the, and he had like the like jagged teeth and the like,
and like the
drooping
the,
eyes.
Yeah.
And he looked old and sick. Like he really pulled that off, but you could tell that his mind was just as fresh as ever. And I really, yeah, I love that. And you're totally right. I love the play between him and Data, because it's such a contrast between like this polished, put together android and this like old kind of like falling apart genius.
Yeah.
And you know, as they're talking, and Graves like, call me grandpa, and Data's just like, okay, grandpa, and they're just like chit-chatting. I love this scene where Graves is talking to him and he says, you know, I used to be a lady killer. And Data's like, you used to commit homicide? And he's like, no, it just means I was as beautiful as I was intelligent. And Data was like, really? And he goes, no, not really. Like, even that was not true. He's like, no, but you know what? I'm dying and I can remember my past however the heck I want. And I like him.
I'm
like,
all for that.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. However, as a feminist, I will say, I didn't love his like quote unquote old fashioned ideas, like because he's old. So you tend to have people who are more stuck in the past. He says that women are not people, they're women. And I was like, I don't like when people do that, or when people like sweetie and honey me. Like, please don't use like term of endearment for me if you don't know me.
Right. If we don't know each other.
Yeah.
And he's very like, he's arrogant. He's definitely conceited. 100%. He's definitely a chauvinist, which they mention later on. They're like, he's a chauvinist. Like he's, you know, he is sexist, and it's trying to be, in his mind, some kind of good way, you know, by saying, oh, women aren't people, they're women. It's supposed to be some kind of a compliment in his mind. Yeah. But it's like, as a woman, no, that's not a compliment.
No, it's just not.
It's weird.
Or you're pretty for a doctor. It's like, again, mm-hmm. What are you actually trying to say? Like, I didn't love that. You know, I kind of glossed over because I was like, okay, they're trying to do like the old crotchety, like, kook, you know, bit, but like,
yeah,
you're old in 23 something. So you were young in 23 some younger years. So not that long ago. So you probably should be past that kind of talk, but
and
whatever.
Really, if he was young, it still wouldn't be that cute.
No.
Like, yeah. And no, actually it takes me back to that episode, The Outrageous O'Connor, where he was just like that, right? He was flirting with Terry Hatcher in the transporter room and like, oh, wow. Ooh, you know, and you're just like,
yeah.
No, thanks.
Anywho. Well, so Data and Graves are now spending a lot of time together. Data's calling him grandpa, which is super cute. And Graves asks him, what do you know about, like, what does it mean to live for you? Like, what does it mean to be really alive? And so he's kind of talking, and Data, of course, like, lets the cat out of the bag to the wrong person, that he's got this effing off switch. Like, stop talking about the off switch, because people are going to take advantage of it, which Graves obviously did. Mm-hmm. So Data then enters the other room, like with the others that are speaking. And we should mention that Graves also had that like young blonde assistant. I didn't catch her name.
Her name is Corrine. So he's got this young assistant who he's in love with. And she kind of shares when they're chit-chatting when she's talking to Dr. Salar, that Corrine is in love with him as well. And it turns out Corrine was a little girl on this planet and has been raised on this planet with nobody but Graves, pretty much. Yeah. So this is basically her father, right? Like her adopted father that she's been raised with. And now that she's grown into a woman, his fatherly feelings for her have turned into romantic feelings, which how does that even happen? That really makes me want to throw up. But somehow this happens.
We simply need to ask Woody Allen, because it's that same shit. Like you adopt a child and then you fall in love with them and then you marry them. And it's super gross.
I don't understand. I do not understand. We need a psychologist on this episode. I do not understand that.
Yes.
So he falls in love with her and she falls in love with him because that's the only man she's ever seen, which also is very incestuous and disturbing. And so she's just kind of like a lollipop. She doesn't really know how to I mean, she sends a distress call. She doesn't know how to like respond. She doesn't really know how to do anything except for assist in whatever way she does. We don't know how she assists because she doesn't seem to be able to do anything.
This is that men writing women shit where it's like the women are the sexy lamp. Like she's the sexy lamp. She is only there to be the object of Graves' affection, but has no other function. It's like, all right, well, that's a bummer. So yeah,
Dr. Salar, who's like got a job to do.
Yeah.
And has like expertise and Wow.
Yes. So Graves, you know, goes into the other room where Counselor Troy and Dr. Salar and the assistant are chatting. And he says, Graves has passed away.
Yeah. Data.
So
Data says that.
Yes. Data says that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. What did I say?
Graves.
Oh, so Data walks in and says Graves has passed away. So we beam back up to the Enterprise and we get for the second time, I don't know if you noticed, Charisse, that really cool visual shot
where
Corrine is sitting in 10 forward and you see the planet sort of move out of the window and then they blast into warp. Mm-hmm. And it is so cool. Such an amazing special. Like, I love it. I nerd never out get every tired time. Of that.
Yeah. Never get tired of it. I could see it every day. And just be like, ooh, pretty.
Yes, 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 yes. And it definitely is super cool to see going into warp from the perspective of someone in 10 forward, because you get a little bit of that like Star Wars, like you're in like a tube of like swirling lights and then you kind of break through that and then you're just zipping along. But every time I see that, it like makes me so happy.
Totally.
So something's wrong with Data, Charisse. Something's not right.
Something's very wrong with Data.
You know, mind control has been like the number one theme, like virus mind control, just anything, like any mind control.
Yeah, possession, basically. That's what this one is, possession, like straight up. And you know what's interesting is that idea of transferring your consciousness into a machine, which is fascinating. They actually carry that idea into Picard, which I think at the time of this recording, season 2 is about to come out or just came out. But in season 1, that was like a big thing was like, can you transfer your consciousness into a machine and how does that look and how does that go? So they like keep up with this theme. Like that's kind of just like a nice little Easter egg that they do, which I still find totally fascinating. So yes. Yeah, so now we're sitting in the transporter room and we've got Graves's body inside of the pod. And now we see our first space funeral. So whenever somebody dies in the course of their duties on the ship, they put them in a pod, they have kind of a service, and they shoot the pod out into space. And this was cool because I'm pretty sure this is our first time seeing this tradition happen on the ship so far, and you know, from between season 1 to now. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, is this like a Navy thing? Did they get this from Navy times? I don't know where they got this idea of shooting people into space. Do you know?
So in shipping days, like the wooden ships, what they would do is if somebody died, there's no refrigeration or anything like that. So you couldn't keep a body. Oh. So they would commit their body to the sea, which is to dump the body basically overboard, but in a like dignified and ceremonial way.
But would they just like drop the like wrap it in something and drop it? Or would they like put it in a little boat or like how would they get rid of it?
Well, because they didn't have the resources to be like
just getting rid of boats every time someone died.
Exactly. And a lot of times like boats didn't even have like, you know, like a little, most of the time they had a little rowboat if they had to like make a landing somewhere, you know, cause the ship was too big and it would run aground, but like they only had one, so they couldn't be doing that. So they would usually like wrap the body up or just sort of like kind of place it with its arms crossed or whatever. And then like lower the body into the ocean.
Interesting. Okay. So this is totally a seafaring tradition. Cause I was like, why do they all shoot the bodies into space? That has to have a bearing in something, because in future space times, I'm sure they could like recycle the body and do something weird with it that could actually be cool. You know, take the organs, who knows what.
At the very least, just like refrigerate the body and like give it to the next of kin to like do what they want, like bury it or whatever.
Incinerate the body. They could cremate it. I mean, there's lots of options, but why did they put them in a pod and shoot them into space? That was
That is a naval tradition. I have no idea if that still happens, but I'm 99.9% certain it does not, because, you know, a sailor in the Navy or whatever, like has family that want the body. So you always bring the body back.
And we have technology now that could prevent,
that can facilitate that.
Yeah.
Okay. You could just refrigerate the body.
So fascinating. Yes. So we have a funeral. And Data wants to say a few words.
Oh my God. How great. To know him is to love him, is to know him is to love him.
Like, those who knew him loved him. Those who didn't know him loved him. And you're just like, what? And then Picard's like, Data. And he's like, I'm almost finished, sir. He's like, you are finished. I was like, oh my gosh.
I wrote in my notes, Data's eulogy of Dr. Graves, OMG. That's all I wrote. I was like, I don't even know what to say about this. It's amazing. It's so great. I love when Data goes into those like philosophical, it's adorable. And it's also very teenage too. When you think like everything you say is just so deep, right? Like that's totally what it feels like. Or it's like totally. Data's still exploring that, even though he now obviously like has been altered in some way. And like, he's not acting normally. And luckily, because possession has happened like 10,000 times in the Enterprise, Picard was like, Geordi, I'm going to need you to run a diagnostic because something is obviously wrong with Data. Mm-hmm. Like, just get on it. Instead of like, we'll just see how this plays out.
Right. Now they're jumping on it. They're not waiting for Wesley to notice something's weird and blow the whistle on it. So they're doing a diagnostic and they're like, huh, we're trying to figure out like what's wrong with Data, and something's definitely wrong. And he's getting more irate. He's getting more just like
insubordinate and moody.
He's getting more like a teenager. And what I thought was interesting is I was like, how does Graves actually intend to keep up this ruse? Like, what was his plan? Because he doesn't know enough about Data as a person to impersonate him.
Yes.
And he wasn't really trying too hard. The only thing that I did notice that was Data-esque, which maybe is a part of the programming, is that even as Graves, Data still could not use contractions. Right. He still could not say can't.
Really?
He still had to say cannot. Yeah. He still could not use contractions. And so I thought, well, maybe that's like a limitation in the programming that Graves can't overcome. But besides that, he wasn't really trying to pretend to be Data. He didn't know Data well enough to pretend to be him. He was just being Graves, you know, in Data's skin. And I thought, well, he's going to be found out pretty quickly. What's his end game? Like, he wants to make another body and stick Kareen in it and they can live forever together and okay. But like, how is that going to work? Are you going to be like, okay, I quit Starfleet. Let me run off with a shuttle. Like, I just don't see the long-term plan here.
Yes. It's like Jake trying to run away to the space circus, going impulse power with the Enterprise following behind it going, come back. Like, what do you hope to achieve? what do you hope to achieve here? You're right. Like, I didn't think that far ahead. And clearly neither did Dr. Graves because he was
he couldn't have, because running into Data was a total surprise that it happened in the last moments of his life.
Yeah.
And like, he's smart. He had to know someone was going to find out soon enough. I mean, he knew Kareen knew who he was like almost immediately.
Yes.
So yeah. Like, all right. Next step, question mark.
And Dr. Graves' personality is so large. It fills the entire room. So there's no way that like Data's quiet professionalism was going to be like exchanged for this like boisterous in your face personality. And nobody was going to notice that. Like, he is moody as hell and I'm there for it. I love moody Data. It's so much fun to see him like shrugging, totally being like, I don't care. It's super fun.
So Troy runs this like image scan on Data to see like what's going on with him. It's some kind of emotional test or whatever, and puts these little electrodes, I guess, on future electrodes, space electrodes on his head and then shows him all these images. And did you notice in that like sea of images, we saw a picture of Yar and we saw a picture of Rimmick. And I thought, oh, that's fun. Yes. Rimmick's going to get a rise out of Data because everyone hates Rimmick. Of course, Kareen and Graves and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Rimmick's face is like the most punchable face in Starfleet. So, of course.
That's our next t-shirt right there.
the most punchable face in Starfleet. Yeah,
it's Rimmick. Just Rimmick. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have another one for Leland T. Lynch. And we'll have another one for Pulaski. We'll have a whole line of shirts.
The punchable faces of Starfleet. Yes, Leland T. Lynch is right up there.
Yeah, so that's just totally fascinating. But what Troy finds out is that it doesn't make him crazy. Troy finds out that there are two distinct personalities inside of Data. One is this kind of, is this recessive or like quiet kind of shrinking personality that's very professional and all of that. And the other is growing larger and larger, which is this boisterous, loud, you know, big personality. And when they bring in Dr. Salar to get her second opinion on Graves' personality, everything she's describing is fitting Data's behavior to a T. And Picard's just like, aha. Because no one else knew that his plan was to transfer his brain to a machine except for Kareen, who didn't share that information.
For some unknown reason. That might have been helpful.
She probably didn't know any better. Didn't know she should share it. So
yeah, maybe not. Yeah. And you're right. They describe that the stronger personality is like eating the original, like quieter, recessive Data personality. Mm-hmm. Just like, we have to act fast because at some point he's going to like overtake it and then there'll be no Data left, which is like,
which would be so heartbreaking.
Oh no.
His graves. Boo.
No.
Because as he kept going, he got more and more of his personality that was sucky. Was getting bigger and bigger. So he wasn't like funny and charming. He was just obnoxious and rude.
Yeah.
And dangerous. You know, he started getting really dangerous because he's not in an old man's fragile body. He's in an android's body that's super strong.
Yes. Well, I was so fascinated by the scene where Picard brings Corrine up to the bridge to just kind of like give her a little tour. And Data is like, as Graves is overcome with jealousy. Mm-hmm. And I love the like muttering under his breath and like absolutely not himself, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a jealous old man and feeling threatened by like Picard.
And Riker in that scene. He was just like any man with a penis near Corrine. He was just like, she won't want you or you or you. And you're like, wow.
That's not a good look. Gentlemen out there who are interested in the lady, that's not the way to go because we will flag you as a psychopath and never speak to you again.
which was actually accurate in this case. Cause you're like, wow, he's losing it. I mean, maybe he's not a psychopath, but he's definitely losing it. Right. When he just goes off and he's like, she doesn't like older men. And that's his own insecurity of that's why they couldn't be together because he was too old. And then he turns to Riker and she doesn't like lesser intellects because, you know, Riker's not an older man. He's like in the prime of his life. So he's feeling like, you know, insecure about him. And it's just like, Picard's Data, get out of here. Like, go into my ready room. We're going to talk right now. And she's like, oh my word, like this person would be so sad if this person took away Data and all that was left was this pile of jealousy.
Yes. It's just all the negative emotions, like combined with this like super, you know, mega ego. Like
it's raging adolescence, right? He like went way back in time.
Oh my God. Did he ever? So Data, you know, he eventually like, you know, goes off to 10 forward and he meets Corrine and kind of reveals she had a sneaking suspicion, you could tell, but like kind of lets the cat out of the bag finally and like reveals that it's Ira and she is not thrilled and weirded out, which I think totally normal, right? Mm-hmm. Like I would be. And then he says, well, don't worry. Like, I know why you're concerned, which he's completely fucking wrong about, but like, I know why you're concerned. I will find a body for you. Like, I'll make another android for you. And then we can live together forever. It's like, dude, you are not reading the situation correctly. Like she is fragile and upset. And now you're freaking her out. And she does not want to live forever in a machine.
No.
Which she says, and he
flips out.
He flips out and he squeezes her hand too hard and fractures her hand.
Yeah. And takes off her wrist and stuff. And
so he
definitely misread the situation. She was in love with him and he was in love with her. If he had hooked up with her as an old man, then it probably would have been fine with her because they would have had however many minutes, days, months together. And then he would have died and then she would have moved on with her life. Right. Gross. But it would have fulfilled both of their fantasies. They would have died with smiles on, you know, he would have died with a smile on his face and she would have moved on to have a life with someone probably her own age. But in this way, they don't get that chance to have whatever magic they had is not there when they're just taking their consciousness and plopping it into an android body. Like that's not the fantasy that she had. And he definitely misread the situation. And then upon being rejected, he storms off in a tantrum, which I can't blame him. I'd be upset too.
Yeah,
and
sure.
This was all, you know, he was like, finally, we can be together. Finally, you know, all of our dreams can come true. And she's like, no thanks. It's just like, what do you do with that?
He has built this moment up in his mind to be this like huge, like grand gesture.
Yep.
And she was like, I don't want any of that.
Nope, which not even a little
same. But to his defense, we've all been there where like you build up a moment in your mind. And then when it doesn't pan out, it's crushing.
It's
you know?
A heartbreaking disaster. And you're like, that did not go how I thought it was going to go in my head. Yep, we've all been there. That's also part of growing up. So unfortunately. So he kind of storms off in a huff. And Picard's like, all right, I know what's going on. Like, I'm going to go talk to him. I'm going to handle it. You know, don't worry, Worf. Like, I'll just talk to him. Because he's just going to go and be, you know, his political self and he'll just kind of talk him down. And so he goes to find him in engineering, and Graves in Data's body is just kind of like pondering, just staring at the warp core, kind of like, wow, you know, probably still stinging from that rejection and thinking of, well, what do I do next if I don't have Kareen by my side forever? Like now what? And so Picard comes up and they have this great conversation where,
well, wait, hold on. Before he goes up, Data says, you're not going to like what you see if you come up, right? And then Picard, of course, is like,
well, Data says, I might not like it if you come up. That's what he says.
Ah, I thought he was
like a threat. He says, don't come up.
You're not going to like it. Ah.
No, he says, don't come up because I may not like it.
Oh, see, I misheard that. But the thing that caught my attention, and I've wanted to ride in one of those forever, is that little one-person elevator thing.
Yeah.
The
like open turbo lift.
I've wanted, ever since I first saw Star Trek TNG and saw that.
Yeah.
I have wanted to ride one of those things forever. Also, that's the only one on the whole ship, I think. I guess. I don't know. We never see it anywhere else.
That's the only one we ever see because that's the only place on the ship that has two levels that we can see the top level from the bottom level.
Yes. Yes.
Like that's the only like two-story room that we ever see in the entire ship. As far as I remember, everything else is always just one room, like on one level. So yeah, I mean, it might be the only kind of old school elevator. It kind of reminds me of like a mining shaft elevator.
Yes. Yes. It totally does. And it's so cool. I love that thing. Cool. And I just want to ride in it. I just want to ride in that little one person elevator. Like, somebody please make my dreams come true. But okay, so he gets up there. That's super minor. But for me, it was my like, oh, the elevator. So he comes up and he has this whole conversation.
Yes. So he comes up and he has this conversation. And Picard's just like, look at you. Look at yourself, man. Like, no man gets to outlive his time. Every man has a time to die, and this is your time. You've cheated death, and you need to kind of pay up. And Graves is just like, whatever, shut up. I hate you. You know, kind of putting his fingers in his ears like, la, 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 la.
By the way, bodies littered around him.
Right.
Littered.
We see poor Geordi all passed out on the ground. You're like, oh gosh, I hope he's still alive. And Picard does check his pulse and stuff. And he's just like, man, like, and then they have this conversation about Data and what is Data alive or not, which I love this conversation that they keep having throughout TNG because I think it's so fascinating. So Graves is saying he's an inanimate object. He's a machine. I can take over him however I like because machines, you know, machines exist to serve humans. And Picard says Data's different, but that does not make him expendable or insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
Like just because that he's line, different from you. So good, right?
Yeah. That like, line this, was so good.
This is why I love Picard. Lines like this. Like yes. That line was so good.
The writing of that line and Patrick Stewart's delivery of that line. Like he didn't say the line as though it was this like deep thought that like deserved this wide berth. Like he just said it like Picard would, you know, just sort of direct and to the point and still like, I don't know, with feeling. And it was such a great line. And I put that in my notes as well.
Yeah, it was great. And I love his whole speech actually was just delivered so powerfully, I thought. I mean, I was like, who could not listen to him? You know, who could possibly disagree with this? And then he says this thing to Graves that really kind of gets him thinking where he says, look around you, look at what you've done. And he comm badges the doctor to find out what's going on with Kareen. And she's like, oh, well, she's fractured her wrist in all these places. And again, I'm like, HIPAA, people. But whatever. So we know all your medical business.
It worked well as a device plot.
Yeah. It needed to work. And yeah. I'm just like, so you could just like comm badge and be like, what's going on with Charisse? And you could just be like, well, let me tell you. Just over the airways. But anyways. So he finds out that he's really hurt Kareen and you just see like the regret in his face, which is lovely because Data never shows emotion because he's an android. So you get to see him like just have this regret and you see like Geordi and he's just like, how many more? How many more Graves? How many more accidents? Because Graves is like, well, that was an accident and that was an accident. That how many more accidents are you going to let happen on your watch? And so he pimp slaps Picard, which was
he backhands him.
Oh
but
my
I,
gosh, I was laughing so hard at Patrick Stewart's handling of his own stunts in this one.
I thought he did such a great job. Actually, I thought Patrick Stewart did a magnificent job. He hit the wall and then fainted and kind of like wobbled and spun and fell down. And I went, bravo. And I clapped a little bit. I was like, That was excellent. That was so good. That was so good. A good old fashioned knocking out.
Oh my gosh. I laughed
out loud. And it got the point across.
What just happened? Yeah. And so he's looking, and as he's looking down at now Picard's body laid right next to Geordi's body,
yeah.
He's like, how many more? How many more? He starts asking himself that question. Like, how many more accidents? I'm causing so much harm and damage. And that was never his intention. As much of a dick as he is in this episode, he doesn't actually want to hurt anybody. Like, that's not what he wants. And he even says that's not what he wants, but that's what he's doing. And so that kind of gives him the impetus to be like, all right, you're right. My time is up. I have to let this body go. And yeah, that's great.
That was like the perfect time for the little tiny bit that was left of Data to sort of infuse that moment with like, look at what you're doing. Because, you know, I feel like if Data was totally gone and it was just Dr. Graves, like that megalomaniacal like drive probably wouldn't have been deterred by like all these bodies that he's leaving in his wake. But yeah, he seems to get it. And then the next thing we know, Picard is being revived. And he immediately is like, where's Data? And they find him in his quarters, and Data's lying down on the ground, like face up. And when they wake him, I guess is the right word. They wake him and Data's like, why am I lying on the ground in this undignified position? Like surrounded by like the captain and all these people, which I thought was very cute.
Looking at me? Yeah, yes. I thought it was cute. He goes, may I ask a question? And Geordi's like, you just did. Well, then may I ask another question after this question? Yes, you may. Why am I laying here? And why are you staring at me? And why? And Picard's just like, all right, Data's back. That's all I need to hear. That's him.
That was so perfect. This is beginning to be the point of the series where the characters now know each other well enough to know like when you're back, right? In season one, we're still really kind of getting backstory on people and getting a feel.
And we have so many possessions and virus takeovers that it's hard to know who's really who.
Yeah, it is very hard to know. So Graves' consciousness is gone. Like he's recognized like what he's done and he's transferred his knowledge to the ship's computer, but his personality is totally gone. So all of the information, like the ones and zeros are there, but his personality is gone. And that's kind of where the episode ends. And I thought that this was just a really fun way to like see Brent Spiner as Data, like stretch himself out a little bit and be like moody and possessive and insubordinate and jealous and all these negative emotions. They're really fun to see in Data because we understand inherently that everybody on the crew has those feelings, but it's just not professional to like let them be seen. But Data, you know, in possession, like doesn't know that. And he's just, I really like that so much about this episode.
See, so we did like this episode.
I didn't love it. It's not one of my favorites, but it's a good, it is a good episode.
Yeah. I probably want to watch it again, but,
yeah.
But I didn't hate it. Like I did like it. I thought it was very, very interesting. And I'm not sure how they could have pushed the drama in a way that would make it more exciting. Like, I don't really know, but I think the story was good for what it was. And it kind of takes you on a little journey and you see kind of, you come into contact with immortality versus death and love versus rejection and insecurity versus brilliance. And I don't know, it just had a lot of like human things in here.
Yes.
It's an entire episode surrounding an android.
Yeah, I really like that too. I like that too. Well, I feel like we've done it and maybe we don't need to revisit this episode, but we did like it. So next week we are talking season 2, episode 7, A Natural Selection. So guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us. We love talking Trek with you.
Yep, we'll see you next time. Bye. Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com. to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.